Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, November 21st, 2024. We'll start with a story titled District 118 Board, Get Us Instructed to Return to On-Site Work. Superintendent claims threats to safety force her to work from home. This is written by Amy Graham McCarty. District 118 Superintendent Dr. Alicia Geddes has been instructed to return to on-site work at the district office, but the question remains, will she comply or leave her position? On the agenda for Wednesday's school board meeting was a public discussion of the superintendent's status. The public discussion was requested by board members Kimberly Corley and Darlene Halloran. Geddes had been working remotely after she said she had received threats, including a letter from the Ku Klux Klan dating back to May. Geddes began working from home following alleged threats she received dating back as far as May during Danville High School's graduation ceremony. On that day, a dark-colored truck displaying Confederate flags was present. Geddes instructed the driver to remove the flags. A short time later, she says she received a letter from the Ku Klux Klan. In the police-filled case report supplement from Danville Police Department, it is reported that Geddes provided a plastic Ziploc baggie containing an envelope addressed to the resident at her home address. The envelope contained two pieces of paper from Gulf Coast White Knights, the first page reading, "Save Our Land, Join the Klan," with a phone number listed on the bottom. The report states, the second page provided included the statement, and I have to turn the page, "It's all right, Danville police followed up on the letter and spoke to the man who created the flyer, but he said he had not used it in several years. The man is in central Mississippi. Further investigation revealed that the man, based out of Chicago, had mailed out random envelopes, including one to Danville. That man, police reports say, has been investigated by the FBI several times, but their investigation revealed no crimes were committed. The threats continued, Geddes said, when dark-colored trucks displaying Confederate flags would follow her around town, including when going to pick up her son. Danville police investigated the alleged incidences and determined that the threats were found to be not credible based on the information provided. The DPD also reached out to the FBI, who Geddes told them was also investigating the threats. In October, Geddes informed the DPD she would be leaving her residence until the matter was resolved and the FBI conducted their investigation. In an email to police command from Danville Police Chief Christopher Yates, Yates wrote, "I contacted the FBI and they advised that they have not received any information that would indicate that Geddes is in any danger, but are continuing to look into her complaint. At this point, neither DPD nor other agency has been able to corroborate any information given that would indicate a real threat. However, due to the circumstances, we will proceed with care until the FBI provides a final conclusion to their review." During the meeting, Board President Dr. Randall Ashton read the following statement. "The board takes threats to our employees seriously. As a result of alleged threats to the superintendent had been working remotely after considering the information provided by Danville Police Department, and given the current status of the FBI investigation as ongoing, the board has reached a consensus that to have the superintendent return to on-site working. We will be working with her on her return to on-site working. We will not be commenting any further, as this is a personal matter, and there is still an open FBI investigation." Several spoke on Geddes' behalf at the meeting Wednesday. "Yesterday evening, watching the news, I saw some things referencing our district and how to do with our superintendent. It just took me back when they talked about seeing dark trucks with flags on them, Danville resident Brenda Brown shared. My experience the last 6 months or better, I live on the east side of town and I have experienced dark colored trucks with Confederate and American flags on the back of them. They would turn on different streets, Porter Street. By the time I get to Griffey, they are coming down another way, going down another side street. It didn't appear they were trying to find a resident. They were just cruising. This has happened often in the last 6 months. Brown said the scenario reminded her of growing up and seeing trucks with flags driving around and shouting racial slurs at black families. To me, it was harassment, she said. It is very hurting to know that this has happened to our superintendent. I just want you to know it is very real. It's real, and it hurts, especially if you are a person of color like me. Consider some of these flags I am expressing to you. These things are real, and it hurts. It hurts to the bone. We, as black people in our community, have been harassed in this matter. Brown said it is her prayer that this will cease. Lloyd Randall asked those in attendance, "Who are we, and what are we? What have we become?" He said the behavior Geddes experienced was intimidation and harassment. Our superintendent is in danger, whether you want to believe it or not, he said. There is a double standard, and many of you don't realize it because of our reality. This was a crime against humanity, and we are all complicit when we don't stand up against it, each and every one of us. If you are here for the purpose of resistance, then you need to get out of the way. Who is going to speak for you if you don't speak to Dr. Geddes, if you don't speak for Dr. Geddes? Mary Rockwell questioned the board about how they are verifying Geddes' work hours and how complaints can be dealt with if she is not reachable. Are we to believe dark vehicles and dark trucks are apparently racist? Does that excuse white trucks? I mean, where does this end? She said. How do we expect our students to be present at school despite actual threats of harm against their safety, but allow the superintendent to avoid being present at her job despite there being no actual threat? Toni Town will accept her new position on the school board in April, but told the board she hoped there would be a change before then. I hope I don't have to deal with some of the things that I've heard, some situations where maybe people don't get to say exactly what they feel or how they want to vote because they feel pressured to vote a certain way, she said. I have a hard time understanding Geddes possibly not being at work. Everything is in her hands. We need some movement, some changes. At the conclusion of the meeting, Board Vice President Shannon Schroeder said, "We take the safety of our staff, students, and everyone that the district has stewardship over very, very seriously. We do not accept any type of violence, and we would value each one of you." Corley, who had called for a discussion into the superintendent's status, appeared to struggle with the board's decision and statement. "I have a lot of comments. I can't say most of them," she said. Thank you to everyone who came to speak. We, of course, take all threats seriously, especially our staff, who get assaulted a lot, and our students who get threatened a lot. I know that they feel and think, so I hear you and I see you. When asked if Geddes would accept returning to on-site work, board members said they could not comment as it is a personal matter. Calls to Geddes by the Commercial News have not yet been returned. Threats to students. On Wednesday, Northridge Middle School issued a statement regarding three men threatening students at a bus stop before school. In a letter to parents, Geddes said, according to witnesses, two adults threatened three Northridge students at the bus stop, flashed a weapon, and fled before police arrived. Geddes said that the district and school administrators were working with her Danville Police Department regarding the incident. The letter and a phone call were made public at 3 p.m., the end of the early release school day. There was no indication that any prior attempt to notify parents of students was made before that. In a separate incident Tuesday, Danville police investigated a potential threat to Northeast Elementary Magnet School. Students at the school were outside of physical education class, and around 8:25 a.m. when an individual on Loring Street exited a home and told the students and teachers to get back inside due to a shooting in the area. Danville police were notified and investigated. The school was informed that there was no viable threat in the area and they were safe to resume normal activities. Next story is titled, Rokita's Immigration Probe Could Face Legal Challenges. This is written by Carson Gerber in CNHI State Reporter in Indianapolis. Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita this month sent out civil demands to six organizations, including nonprofits and a school district, as part of an investigation into coordinated efforts to bring large numbers of migrants to Indiana. But the move could be faced with legal landmines and end up in court, according to immigration lawyers. Rokita sent the demands to organizations in Logansport, Evansville, and Seymour, communities that have all recently gained media attention for rumors and falsehoods calculated about their immigrant communities. In Logansport, the Cass County Health Department and Logansport Community School Corporation received demands. In Evansville, notices were sent to the nonprofit God is Good and Berry Global Group. Jackson County Industrial Development Corp. in Seymour received a demand, along with international nonprofit group Tent Partnership for Refugees. Civil demands are not public record, and it's unknown what Rokita specifically requested from each entity. Rokita said his office is conducting the investigations under Indiana's Deceptive Consumer Sales Act and Indecent Nuisance statutes, claiming the influx of illegal immigrants is causing unneeded stress on schools, hospitals, law enforcement, and labor and house markets. I'm creatively trying to use every tool in the law to stop the left's intentional destruction of Indiana, he said in a release. It smacks of intimidation. The move mirrors recent actions taken by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, who in September sent a civil investigation demand to the El Paso nonprofit Las Americas Immigrant Advocacy Center. And I got to go to another page again, sorry. The demand, like Rokita's filings, also claims the group of violating the state's Deceptive Trade Practices Act. The nonprofit is now suing Paxton, a Republic who over the years has filed a litany of legal actions against local migrant nonprofits and immigration rules implemented by President Joe Biden's administration. The Las Americas lawsuit claims Paxton's investigation is just a plot to shut down the nonprofit by violating its constitutional rights to free speech and attorney-client privilege. The nonprofits targeted by Rokita could have grounds to take similar action, explained Jennifer Brown, an Indianapolis business immigration lawyer. Unlike businesses, nonprofits, and religious organizations are not obligated to vet clients' immigration status, according to Brown. I'm confused and bewildered and sad to think about the targeting of these organizations, she said. Frankly, it smacks of intimidation and fear mongering. The demand sent to the Cass County Health Department in Logansport should also potentially run afoul of HIPAA laws, which predict health information from disclosure without a patient's consent, Brown explained. Gurinder Kaur, CEO of the Immigrant Welcome Center in Indianapolis, said the filings seem to aim at creating fear and angst more than actual investigating illegal immigration. It just continues to put immigrants in a negative light and feed into what's happening in Seymour and Logansport, where rumors about migrants have led to threats and pushback from the residents, Cower explained. A surprise. State Representative Alex Burton said officials in Evansville have worked hard to ensure immigrants coming to the city can find a job and a place to live to support their families and contribute to the community. That's why it came to a bit of surprise when Rokita sent civil demands to God is Good, a refugee settlement resettlement outreach, and Berry Global Group, the city's fourth largest employer, explained Burton, the Democratic lawmaker who represents the city and it's also an employee at Berry Global. Phone messages left for Berry Global and God is Good requesting comment for this article were not returned. Evansville has experienced an increase in Hispanic, Haitian, and Marshallese immigrants, Burton noticed, but it's no secret why the city welcomes them with open arms. It's because there are supports here to help people, he said. It's not like they're coming here and causing incredible disruptions and making our community unsafe or anything along those lines. We're a community who's in awe, from the mayor's office to the county commissioners to our health care providers, he added. This is an effort that we've been intentional with. Okay, there's just one obituary today. Sun City, West Arizona, James W. Big Jim Darby, 86, of Sun City, West Arizona, formerly of Danville, Illinois, passed away peacefully, surrounded by his loving family, at 11:48 a.m. on November 18th at Hospice of the Valley's Thunderbird Home in Glendale, Arizona. A celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday, November 25th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Officiating will be Reverend James Blue, a longtime family friend. Visitation will take place from 1 to 5 p.m. on Sunday, November 24th at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Park. Memorial contributions may be made to the Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 1930 Bowman Avenue, Danville, Illinois, 61832. Okay, on the front page is a picture of Bismarck Henning, Rossville Alvin High School students, Abby Cox and Alvia Reefsteck kneeling. And standing from left, Candace Sullivan, Noah Bronfield, Sydney Creason, and Reese LeBon trim a tree at the school in preparation for the Christmas season. Today's frosty temperatures and dusting of snow may have many of the in the holiday spirit. Snow is expected before 3 p.m., followed by rain and snow throughout the afternoon. Today's high will near 37 with a breezy west northwest wind of 18 to 22 miles per hour with gusts as high as 38 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation is 90%. New snow accumulation of around an inch is possible. And on another page, there's a picture. It says PEO donates to Women Helping Women Industry. And members of three Danville chapters of the PEO Sisterhood recently collected money for Women Helping Women Outreach Ministries. Pictured from left are Mary Chambers of Chapter HX, Tammy Brazil Howard of Women Helping Women, Beth Chamberlain of Chapter LT, Diane Hample of Chapter KE, and Judy Henderson of Chapter HX. Miss Brazil Howard founded Women Helping Women to provide physical, emotional, and spiritual support to women in need in the Vermilion County area. PEO is an international organization of women who support women through educational scholarships, grants, awards, and loans. Next story is titled, Hoopston Man Charged with 12 Counts of Child Pornography, written by a staff reporter in Hoopston. A Hoopston man was arrested and charged with 12 counts of possession and dissemination of child sexual abuse material, was licensed to work as a child welfare specialist. Connor Jelonski, age 24, was approved by his license for placement permanency work with Lutheran Social Services on July 24th and 5 days before Illinois State Police began an investigation of him following a cyber tip. Illinois State Police agents began their investigation on July 29th. Gilonski was arrested on November 7th in Danville and is being held without bond at the Vermilion Public Safety Building, according to the probable cause affidavit. During a search of his home, police found at least 12 computer files that contained video or images or of children under the age of 13 being sexually abused. Gilonski's next court appearance is scheduled for Monday at 2:30 in courtroom 4B. The investigation is a collaborative effort between the Illinois State's Attorney General's Office, Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, the Vermilion County Metropolitan Enforcement Group, the Vermilion County Sheriff's Office, the Danville Police Department, the Vermilion County State's Attorney Office, and Illinois State Police. Anonymous tips of child sexual abuse material can also be reported through the cyber tip line at www.cybertipline.com. To keep kids safe online, learn more at Illinois State's Attorney General.gov/online-safe for resources for survivors of sexual abuse. Visit www.missingkids.org/get-the-help-now/csam-resources. Charges are not evidence against a defendant, and the defendant is presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. We'll read a couple of letters to the editors. Thank you, Mr. Harvey. To the citizens of Community College District 507, recently David Harvey retired from the Board of Trustees of Danville Area Community College. Mr. Harvey was elected for 4 consecutive 6-year terms as a trustee and has served as chairperson for the past 11 years. Having recently served as the trustee for 14 years and vice chair for 7 years, I was privileged to experience his leadership and acumen relating to the roles of presidential administration and the board policy. Mr. Harvey had a unique understanding of these different functions with the well-being of DACC students as his underlying principal. David's greatest concern was always for the students, emphasizing the board's responsibility to provide opportunity for education and training that would enhance student lives in the future. Mr. Harvey, the many DACC students, parents, and partners, thank you for your decision, your dedication to them and to our college. And another letter to the editor on vaccines. It's every man for himself. It takes a cracked mindset to name a crackpot with no scientific training to head the agency that oversees 11 agencies tasked with protecting Americans' health. They include the Food and Drug Administration, the National Institutes of Health, Medicare, and Medicaid. Donald Trump's pick of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head Health and Human Resources suggests utter lack of concern for the well-being of everyday Americans. Bobby, as Trump affectionately calls him, could threaten cutting-edge research into cancer cures, for heaven's sake. Trump is clearly enjoying the latest clown show, urging Bobby to go wild on health care. Except Bobby and his Trump-delivered supporters to accuse scientists and public health officials of being part of this, of some dark elite bent on forcing vaccinations. They will undoubtedly find innocent missteps during the COVID epidemic to inflate their accusations. Believe me, the elite doesn't care. The elite, which I define as the rich, but as the informed, know who has medical expertise and isn't. And it's not this weirdo who says that a worm has been eating his brain. The elite know to get their shots. RFK Jr. advocates drinking raw milk, which can contain harmful bacteria, viruses, and parasites. Go ahead, drink raw milk if you want. Me and mine will pass. RFK Jr. insists that current levels of fluoride in drinking water lower the IQ. No evidence supports that, but lots of data show that fluoride reduces cavities. Trump says removing fluoride sounds okay to me. The New York Post has been one of Trump's bouncier cheerleaders, but it found no wit in the pick of this fruitcake to head HHS. I quote its editorial, "We sat down with RFK Jr. back in May of 2023 when it came to the topic of health. His views were a head-scratching spaghetti of what we can only call warped conspiracy theories and are not just on vaccines. Pesticides, cell phones, ultrasound could be driving an upswing in Tourette syndrome and peanut allergies. A radical, prolonged, and confused transition ordered by a guy like JFK Jr. would use this his office, high office to spout his controversial beliefs leaves a lot of room for several things to go wrong and for people to wind up harmed and or even dead. And for later, recall that hundreds of thousands of COVID patients had died because they failed to get properly vaccinated, according to reputable studies. Who can forget the pathetic pleas of patients breathing their last breath, begging doctors for the shot, and being told it was too late? Recall how Trump downplayed the seriousness of COVID with his rancid brand of humor, his suggestions that the afflicted might find a cure swallowing a disinfectant such as bleach. He found hydrochloroquine, a malaria drug found useless against COVID. What a card. When Trump came down with COVID, there was no running wild with his care. He was airlifted to Walter Reed Hospital, where he received first-class treatment informed by the best science, Regeneron antibodies, antiviral remdesivir, and dexamethasone, a steroid. Forgive these suspicions that Trump takes some sadistic pleasure in exercising his power to get people to hurt themselves, but that's right up there with the malignant narcissist playbook, and he is a textbook case. Back to me and mine, we have every intention of ignoring the idiot who believes that Americans are being unwillingly poisoned by canola oil, corn oil, and sunflower oil. We have our COVID shots. We have our flu shots. You want to take advice from the fruitcake who illegally dumped a dead bear in Central Park? Feel free. That's your right. In Trump Part 2, it's every man for himself. For women, same idea. Okay, we'll run through a couple of news briefs. Retired teachers to meet. The quarterly meeting for Vermilion County Retired Teachers Association will be Thursday, December 5th at DACC Bremer Center. All new retirees are invited to attend with a complimentary lunch. Entertainment will be provided by the Danville Barbershop Chorus and will begin at 11:15 a.m. The meal will be provided by Schroeder Catering, and the cost for members is $16. Reservations are required by Friday, November 29th. Contact Cheryl Schroeder at 217-474-7117 or cheryl@cooktech.net. And one more, DACC Board of Trustees to meet. The DACC Board of Trustees will meet today, November 21st at 5:30 p.m. in the boardroom. Vermilion Hall Room 302 at Danville Area Community College at 2400 East Main Street. There will be an open house at Hegler Hall from 4:45 to 5:15. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, November 21st, 2024. Looks like it's going to be a little snow today. I don't think it's going to add up to anything, but it's definitely cold out there with that wind. So make sure you get bundled up before you go out. Hope you all have a good week. Go Illini this weekend on their last football game. And hopefully I'll see you again next week. Take care. Bye.